Hey there, welcome to Sauce and Bomb Podcast. I'm your host, Anna Dana, head of growth at Sauce Group, serial acquirer buying wonderful sauce businesses to take them to the next level. And here I chat with inspiring founders and experts to get an inside scoop on how they made their business a success. And today with me is Josef and his business we are already taking to the next level. So welcome back. Tom is from Oatly, a new tool in content and brand monitoring for AI-powered search experiences. Super exciting. This is something that I've been wanting to talk about for a while. So welcome to the show.
Hi, Anna. Thanks for having us. Really excited to be here.
Thanks for having me again.
Yes, welcome back. So cool to have you. Like I said, it's really fascinating to learn what you guys are building because, everything's about AI now, right? And we have been talking about the fact that, yes, we do see SaaS Group popping up in Perplexity, in ChatGPT. We have no idea what kind of makes us rank there in a way. So it would be really interesting to learn what you're doing in the space and, you know, what you have figured out in it. But let's start with your background. You have a really fascinating story in how you got back together, I guess. So yeah, tell me a little bit from the beginning.
Yeah, absolutely. So maybe personal background. I'm a SaaS marketer by heart, I would say. And actually one of the first SaaS businesses I ended up with is a company that both of you are very well familiar with. It's called UserSnap. So back in, I think it was 2013, 2014, I applied for a marketing job that was vacant on UserSnap's website. Because I basically moved in Austria to another place and I was looking for to get my foot into the startup scene. And coincidentally, UserSnap popped up. I applied. I think it took me, it was a tough recruiting process. I recall that from Josef and the team. I think it took me 3 months or so. And I joined the team in I think, November 2014. And yeah, Josef and myself have been working together for 4 years, and Josef will touch on the whole UserSnap story in a bit, but this was really where Josef and I met in the first place. And you know, Austria isn't a big country, so you kind of know people in the SaaS space after a while, and Josef and I always stayed in touch for also like just personally, right? I have little kids, Josef has little kids, and we'd like to, I guess, nerd out about that roller coaster ride as well. And yeah, at some point we got back together at Oatly. But personal intro. So for the last 4 years, I used to run marketing at a company called Storyblock. Storyblock is a headless content management system. And yeah, I'm super proud to have built out the marketing team from scratch, from zero people to 25 people. And the thing that makes me really proud there is that the marketing team is now bigger than the company was 4 years ago when I joined. Obviously, the company has seen quite some success there as well, going from seed to Series C. But yeah, long story short, I'm a SaaS marketer. And one of the things you mentioned, Anna, is the big question on what's going on AI search, right? And how that has changed over the last year and how marketing teams need to adjust for that. So yeah, before we jump maybe into the Oatly story, I'm going to pause there. But long story short, I started Oatly together with Josef and Klaus because we wanted to solve our own needs as a marketer, right? To understand what's going on Google, ChatGPT, Perplexity, and whatnot. So yeah, handing it over to you, Josef, for a quick intro.
Thanks. Yes, please. Thanks. What is UserSnap even?
Exactly. No, Anna, you know me very, very well. I'm entrepreneur by heart. I started UserSnap 2013, had various roles there, but my love always to build innovative, great SaaS products. And that's where also then Thomas came on board. Thomas departed at some point in the story and went to Storyblock. Yeah, and I built it up with various different roles. And I think when we handed over UserSnap to SaaS Group, it's now in a very, very good mothership, small advertisement. UserSnap is a great user feedback platform. So if you search for feedback within product, please use UserSnap. Then I ended up connecting regularly with Thomas, and he always shared me the story about what's going on in the marketing space. And I like the marketing space because it's generally very far away from what normally do. I love to build businesses and build tech, and that's what is in marketing a little bit different. And that's why I always loved to chat with him and talk and listen to his problems. And there, I think at one point you came up with the thought of, hey, AI will change everything in the search space. And then I can remember I was a little bit just listening. So I said, okay, interesting. What is he talking about? And I think during this conversation, I think it took 30 minutes, it made click to me. And I said, oh, this is something we have to stay connected. This is something which gets big soon. And that's, I think, was then the starting point of the, let's call it Otterly discussions, because yeah, it was then still some time until we were talking about doing really something together.
Awesome. Yeah, great to hear.
I love how you put it, Joseph, as listening to my problems. So I'm really grateful that you stuck with me on that.
Yeah, look, this is always, I think, when you're building something, there are two things. The one thing is you really have your own, you have problems on your own, and you really try to solve them very good because you're super passionate. And there is the opposite, where someone else tells you about a problem where you understand it, but you're not fearing this problem on you're not fearing or having this problem on your own. And that's the other area of the of when building something is really a great decision. So yeah.
Perfect. Well, I'm glad you found your way back together. You know, when I saw that TechCrunch announcement, I was like, yay, okay, this is exciting. Joseph is building and Klaus are building something together again. And, you know, we got users now. We're super happy with it. And, you know, we decided that we were definitely going to jump on the story. So it's super interesting, you know, that you started in this niche. I mean, I think it's a given, right? AI is everywhere. We already know that. So it's kind of like, yeah, in a way, an easy choice, like where, what to choose and where to build it. But what is kind of the, you know, the big vision for it? And I know you might be in like this iterative space for now. And, you know, for the moment, you might be just thinking, okay, we will give marketers this way to look into where they're mentioned, like what AI-powered search engine is, you know, kind of ranking them higher and stuff like that. But do you actually have a vision in like, okay, where does Otterly going to be in 5 years? Like, what it wants to be when it grows up?
Great question. I mean, let me start with that. We started Otterly because of our realization, my realization on what marketing needs to know what's going on the AI search, right? In simple terms, in different terms, Google introduced Google AI Overviews last year in 2024 in May, and suddenly this black box popped up for many of us who rely on Google from an organic traffic inbound perspective, right? And many SaaS businesses have that reliance, let's say, right? And I as a marketing leader at Storyblock, I kind of had this epiphany moment where I was like, we optimize so much for Google, right? And our organic visibility on Google, but we have no idea what's going on the AI Overviews and how visible we are there. And then put the next platform in, right? Think about ChatGPT, the same situation there. As consumers adjust and use ChatGPT for all different sorts, they also use it for search, right? For research, for give me the best products for XYZ. I'm sure we've all been to ChatGPT to do those type of research. So to your question around the vision, right now we're super focused on solving those visibility gaps for marketing teams. Meaning right now we're super focused on how can marketing teams, brand use those insights, meaning their brand position, how often are they mentioned on ChatGPT? Are their websites even visible on those new type of platforms or not, right? For their own marketing strategy. So they can go back to their teams and be like, this is what we need to do differently from a content perspective, from a website perspective, from a brand perspective. Our goal right now is to be that monitoring tool of choice for marketing teams to gain those insights. But what's next, right? What's next is marketing teams need to act on them. Marketing teams want to improve their visibility from a brand perspective. And in order to do so, you not only need the insights, the information, the data points, you also need the knowledge on content, on your own website, and your own brand. And yeah, I guess from a vision perspective, we were thinking about this. How can we give proper, not only insights, but also recommendations to those brands and marketing teams so they are able to act on it quite quickly? And right now, everybody, we're very early. Early adopters are jumping onto this. But yeah, in the future, it definitely becomes kind of a default battleground where we as brands wanna play in.
That's an interesting point that you said. You're very early on in it. And that's exactly what I thought. Like you kind of got into it when, you know, both like ChatGPT and Perplexity, they're also kind of still figuring it out. Right? I read this awesome post with a breakdown how a founder was using Google versus ChatGPT versus Perplexity, and how, you know, Google is so much better in certain things and, you know, Perplexity is better in others. But maybe, Yosef, this is more of a question to you, kind of on a tech side, but something that, you know, I'm also very curious about. It's obviously, as a marketer, I'm very much satisfied with like kind of seeing where we are and how we can work with that visibility or lack of it. But I'm also curious how it works kind of from the inside. So basically, I was searching for SaaS group on Perplexity and ChatGPT, kind of trying to figure out what's going on, like how it talks about us. Is there any bad mouthing? But basically, what I wanted to finally understand is when I ask Perplexity or ChatGPT about SaaS group, does it give me answers based on the history of my chats with it? Does it give SaaS group some priority inquiries because it's my account, Anna at SaaS.group? So how can marketers get more of a kind of like an unbiased view on what's going on? If we haven't still figured out if there is any, you know, priority or bias from those AI-powered search tools?
I mean, I think when answering those questions, I think you always have to be very careful, because there's only one thing we really know for sure. It's a black box. So that means a lot of things which are happening, either ChatGPT, Perplexity, or Google I/O view, most of the things are working behind our scenes, and we don't know really, and neither Google nor OpenAI is talking really what they are doing and how they are answering those questions. But what we know and what we ensure at Autoly is that we try to get as much as unbiased responses for you as possible. That means we're really trying to do this regular searches for you in temporary modes and in memory disabled, that we really show, okay, what's the most accurate path when a completely new user searches for specific search terms. That's why also we're using the term search prompts here rather than keywords, because that's, I mean, the first transformation. We're transferring now from keyword-based search to search prompt-based search, which broadens up topics a lot in a lot of different ways, and that's then also the bias you're referring to. So I'm pretty sure that when you search with your ChatGPT account, that there is some sort of bias, because I'm OpenAI, or in that particular case that the system prompt maybe includes already that, hey, this is Anna working for SaaS group, let's give her precise answers to that. So the one answer is we don't know it for sure, but what we know already quite good through experiments is that we are trying to make as most unbiased answers as possible.
And I think the thing, Joseph, that you said is also very important to highlight, that if you look at Perplexity or ChatGPT, right, it's it's a combination of sources in the sense of various GPT models were trained on data, right? So if you take GPT-4o, it was used based on a couple of data sources, right, in their LLM model. But on top of that, we have a rack, right, a so-called memory rack that shows off what we're describing. So if you already are a paid customer or you have some browsing history on ChatGPT, that information is used to personalize your AI-generated answer for you, right? And the third thing is web browsing capabilities. So most of these vendors also use now web browsing capabilities to do a basically a real-time search. So it's this black box is basically a combination of the LLM data model, the memory rack, as well as the rack for the web browsing capabilities. And what we do at Audely is we don't have access to your memory rack, right? It's not our goal to do that. So it's the most neutral view on that. And we not only monitor LLM output, but because there might be a slight different output if you just ping directly an LLM compared to ChatGPT, which uses web browsing capabilities in the locked-in state. So yeah, just to iterate and explain those three areas a bit, at the end of the day, we take the most neutral output that you see on those search engines.
Because that makes sense. Would really believe that in the end, this is what the customers need and want. They want to see the most accurate, the most neutral output, because that's where the broad audience, your brand or your search prompt is then performing.
Absolutely. All right. Yeah. Thanks for elaborating. We are going to talk about the way you actually brought Audely to life because, yeah, and I mean, kudos for the TechCrunch article. And I want to ask you how you got this. But before that, you know, I know you've been trying to work with early users. And I wonder how you were, you know, finding them, how you were iterating along with potential customers maybe. And were there any revelations that were really like revolutionary for you that came from the users that, you know, steered the way Audely is now?
Yeah. Oh yeah, there were a few revelations and learnings along the way. But I mean, where to start, right? We started it because we had this assumption, let's say, that marketing teams face more and more pain points around not knowing what's going on Google and ChatGPT. This was the starting point. And when one of the first things we did was we compiled a list of other marketers we know from our work experience, from our background, from our community. And yeah, started reaching out to them. I guess now we can call it alpha testers or our friends and family that we asked for feedback. But I think one of the first things actually that you, Joseph, told me was, Thomas, before we build a product, let's do it in a spreadsheet. So we while creating all of the mockups and wireframes, the first conversations that we had around how do similar personas in the space think about this problem and how a solution could look like was spreadsheet based. We showed them a simple Google spreadsheet where they would see brand rankings. What are the top 10 brands for a particular topic on ChatGPT? They would see like a share of voice calculation. How visible am I with my brand? And that was kind of the starting point from a user research feedback. And we learned a lot. We learned a lot that, yes, brand is important, but people right now care about how much traffic am I getting from those platforms, right? So one of the first learnings was and it depends a bit on the company size, on the industry and so on, but people were more inclined to understand how visible their websites are and their links are because that's generating direct business impact, right? If you get traffic from those sites or potential traffic, it has a different, for SaaS businesses, this more often leads to signups, to leads and so on and so forth. So the links were always coming back as a feedback. And if I recall it correctly, Joseph, we haven't had the links in there in a V1. We haven't even thought about it. So that was kind of learning number one. The second learning
was I just wanted to say at the end of this, I think we were deciding, okay, let's pivot this whole thing.
Yeah, exactly. Because the second learning was, and I mean, OpenAI and Google have made lots of changes in the last couple of months, but we were looking at direct LLM output. So what is directly coming back from a GPT model, for example, right? And this direct text output, let's say, is or could be slightly different than what a real user sees on ChatGPT.com because of the RAG component that we mentioned earlier and a couple of other factors. So the next learning was that marketers were like, yeah, it's a nice information to have, but if you don't ping the API directly, nobody sees that, right? Because the real user experience might be different. So we're like, okay, yeah, that's true. And we're like, we have to pivot. We have to do something about this. So we kind of, I mean, Joseph, is it fair to say we fully rebuilt the product from scratch to match that need?
It's fair to say it was not a complete product like you imagined, but a lot of technology behind, which hasn't just said, okay, let's throw this away. Let's start from scratch.
I think
in that phase we were quite okay with it, so it was not a big drama.
There was no lots of technical depth.
Was it one of those moments, or do you have to do it a couple of times?
I think we did it 3 times. Sure. Didn't we do it?
Sorry. I mean, depends on how detailed you want to go, but I think it was the first monumental question where we're like, okay, we have to move to from LLM monitoring to AI search monitoring. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that we did that then. I think it was one of those critical moments where we're like, which path to follow, right? And how much should we listen to that user feedback, that early on feedback? What's basically a SWOT analysis, right? What are the risks? What are the upsides? But we did that switch. We put the new version live then in October, November 2024, supporting AI overviews. It's obviously a big thing in the US where it's rolled out. It's rolled out in the United Kingdom and many other countries. But for example, in Germany, AI overviews is not yet available. So for us, it was pretty clear that we have to take a US first type of approach on Google especially, but also with the other channels. So that's one platform. The other one was, I don't think we have even supported ChatGPT in the first version, because in the first version it was purely Gemini.
And
I think we supported Perplexity first before ChatGPT.
Yes,
because it was just easier to build
with the API.
Yeah, it's just easier from an API perspective. But yeah, long story short, by October, we did all of that and yeah, put it on the market. That's when it really started to grow tremendously and ultimately then led to our announcement in December with the article that you mentioned on TechCrunch. And yeah, since then we're growing even faster.
This episode is sponsored by Rewardful. Looking for new ways to find customers for your SaaS business? Consider building an affiliate program. Rewardful is the easiest affiliate tracking platform to set up, manage, and scale for SaaS companies. Building a successful affiliate program can be a little bit intimidating at first, and that's why Rewardful has taken what they've observed from their most successful customers' affiliate programs and distilled that into an exclusive online course. The exciting part? Their affiliate marketing course is absolutely free. Start the course at academy.rewardful.com. Academy.rewardful.com. And turn your biggest fans into your best marketers.
I think what's important, what we saw then that this listening to the customers and really do the proper research was a really good one, because then the customers are saying, oh, that's now interesting. Now you're having me. So because as Thomas said, this first iteration where we did analyze the pure LLM output wasn't the kind, yeah, nice, but yeah. Okay, what's now?
Yeah.
And with this pivot iteration, call it whatever, we then found out and we got the response, okay, this was worth it to turn it, and now we are building from that point on towards.
I think the one big learning I had, what you just said, Joseph, is you have to ask very, very clear questions around value and are people willing to pay for that. The reality was, I mean, to be very honest, the reality was everybody was like, yeah, it's nice to know that information on what's going on LLM. But if you then ask the question on would you be willing to pay for that right now, people are like, not really, because it's not really practical. It's not really actionable. But when we ask the same question on an AI search, would you be willing to pay for knowing what your users see on Google or ChatGPT? People were like, yeah, now we're talking. Yeah. So yeah, just because it's always like, I think it sounds easy, right? It's always sounding easier than done. Like, listen to your users, to your customers. Then you talk to 40 people and people tell you all sorts of stuff and you need to prioritize it mentally and also from a product vision perspective. But ultimately it comes down to, is your persona group you're targeting willing to pay for something that you are trying to build?
Yeah, that's true. And I think just to reflect on the moment that Joseph described when, at first it was like, yeah, I don't know what's going on. And then like, okay, now we're talking. I think we had exactly the same situation. It was on the call with Thomas when I started using Otterly and like, okay, I gave it 5 minutes, right? I didn't really have time to like properly try it out, but I also couldn't figure out like where to look at first. And it was 1 week before our call. And then during the call, Thomas started telling me like what's going on, like what to do. And I opened Otterly again and it like everything was there. I guess you were building it at the time and I looked at it and then it was like, okay, well, that was my aha moment. Like, okay, that's what you're supposed to look at and that's how it's supposed to look like. So it was really, really interesting, like, again, to get the visibility without like manually just going through stuff and like kind of playing with prompts. But regarding, you know, kind of, again, showing the light of the day to Otterly, how did you go? I know that there was Product Hunt. At the end of the day, there was TechCrunch article. What worked the most? I guess like your network helped a bit too. What was the biggest boost? And how did you find all these opportunities?
Yeah, I'll start and I mean, Joseph, jump in. It's our story, right? And it might be different for other SaaS businesses, but what we basically did is after talking to our early network, our early users from a user research perspective, at some point we were like, yeah, we have to ship it, right? We have to show it to the world. And I think Product Hunt is a really great community to get early user feedback. Again, the main intention was getting user feedback, getting usage onto the platform. So we did that. And I think it really depends on who you're targeting and what you're trying to build. Our goal always was to build a self-service PLG-led product, which basically means people have to educate themselves along the whole user journey, right? There's no sales touch. There's no human touch in between. So for us, going to Product Hunt helped a lot to drive early users. We got, I think in the first, we were on that particular day, second product of the day, which drove, roughly speaking, I believe 300 signups over 2 days or so. I think in the whole week, we probably collected 500 signups or so through that. And this gave us, again, a tremendous source of feedback on how people, and to be honest, how people not find their way successfully into the product, right? And so we did that. And I would recommend anyone who is looking for like early user feedback to go into those communities, right? Maybe it's Product Hunt, maybe it's, there are other places where Slack communities, close Slack groups and other communities on the internet, depending on your target audience. But it helped us a lot to make the product better and iterate the product. The TechCrunch article itself, I mean, came together because we were like, okay, let's, we are celebrating now 1,000 users on the platform. We we need to announce this formally, officially in a way, right? So we were kind of brainstorming what we can do to stand out and make some sort of announcement around it. Because at the end of the day, we don't only want to be like, okay, it's about us, right? Yet this another startup starting off and hitting the ground running. But we knew, going back to what we said earlier, it's such an early space. So we have to do lots of education. It's our role as a company and as a marketing team to educate other marketers around the space and share data points, research that we do, share how to tackle and be better found on the iSearch. So we, TechCrunch and PR sounds rather traditional, right? But we did it because of those educational needs, and it turned out pretty fine. We partnered up with a PR agency, to be very honest, and to share some insights. I think we got 400 signups since that article went live in the first couple of weeks. So we are super happy with the results because it helped us validate the latest product, and it helped us drive users and drive paying customers to the platform. Again, I wouldn't generalize, and it really comes down to each SaaS in particular. But as a marketer, I'm a big fan that you need to stand out in this crowd, in this noisy market. It's super busy on LinkedIn these days, right? So think about something unusual. And for us, it was, okay, let's try to get a TechCrunch article.
Right? Like, how did we get to the point when TechCrunch article and like PR became unusual? Because everyone's on social media. But that's really funny.
The cool thing I see currently is that people are, because of this educational spiral thing, people are now talking about us and referring us in their articles and say, okay, I analyzed this with Otterly and this came out. And so it's just like other people are also talking about this educational push we gave there. And I think this is really cool to see.
Yeah. And it's funny how we now end up in places where we're like, okay, why did this, you, like we saw recently a slide deck, Joseph, if you remember, where someone was mentioning Otterly in a pitch. So an agency was pitching to someone, and we're like, that's an interesting place to be ending up, like sitting next to Google as the how to author.
Yeah, exactly. We were always thinking about the brand. Verb for Otterly.
that's a fun word. By the way, how did the name come up?
Thomas, please.
I mean, very honestly, it was very simple. At one point we were in a call, Joseph, Klaus and myself, and we were thinking, okay, now it's time to name this product. And one of the first directions we went to were animal names, right? Because I mean, we like animals. We went to ChatGPT and we basically asked ChatGPT, give us a list of names of animals who are cute animals, smart animals, and animals who have a great eyesight. Because we're a monitoring solution, right? So you want to reflect that in your identity. And otters were one of those animals that came up. I learned later on, it's sea otters who have really good eyesight, not the land otters. So maybe we should have checked that a bit earlier. But lucky us, sea otters have a great eyesight and are cute animals. And the domain was free, otterly.ai. So we're like, oh, yeah, let's do it. I think we thought about it for 24 hours maybe, and then we
exactly. Registered. I mean, but we said, okay, let's make fast decisions and then move forward.
Yeah.
Quickly thinking, quickly stepping one step back and think, is there any problem with otters? No. And then.
Who doesn't like otters? But yeah, what else? I'm just thinking like you could end up with, like eagly? what other animals are there with great eyesight? And smart.
I've really forgot, to be honest.
Rabbity.
I can't remember.
There is a shoe company here in Vietnam that's called Rabbity.
Rabbits would be also cute. Yeah. So,
right.
Thomas, if we have to do another pivot, let's call it
Rabbitly.
Rabbitly.
We
yeah.
Gonna save that.
Okay. Yeah, you're free to use it, but I also wanted to to ask you about that educating bit, because I feel like educating customers is tough and no one really wants to kind of learn, at least like I would say actively learn a new skill when it kind of just kind of creeps into your life, then that's okay. How, you know, ChatGPT crept in all our lives, but actively learning something like a new tool that's figuring it out, this is challenging. And I wonder how you guys are doing it. Like, is it tutorials? Is it, again, like maybe since you're very early stage, is it just one-on-ones even with your customers? Are you looking for ambassadors to then kind of create this content for you to push it forward? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, maybe unprepared question for you, Joseph. I don't want to put you on the spot. I think you told me in the beginning, I have no idea about SEO and what's going on there. And you've had a fair amount of learning in the last couple of months. Exactly. So tell us maybe about that and how we use that maybe right now at Audely for our customers.
Yeah, I mean, there's maybe I exactly phrased it like that. So I have no idea about SEO. That always other people did that for me. I mean, but during them, I found out, okay, there were some things I knew already, but I combined that again. But I think how we educate our customers, it's not that on that one thing which clearly is successful in educating our customers. But I think at that stage where we are right now, still this one-on-one kind of onboarding and doing it basically in two ways, helping them to find a way through the product and also getting our insights. Okay, there are the constant hiccups of user onboarding or of helping and how to work that. One other thing is we really kept the product from a starting point as simple as possible, because we want to have for our customers a very fast kind of aha moment where they say, okay, oh, this is my first value I get out of Audely. And then later in point, we bring those in where I say, hey, do you know that this capability we also have? Do you know that there are links appearing which you maybe should aware of? Do you know that your brand rank goes down, goes up, things like that? But I think for a first glimpse, it's important to know, okay, they know where with my search prompt I am right now, or even with for other customers who are starting really with keywords, they say, okay, first we translate those keywords to search prompts and help you by doing that. And then monitoring not 15 search prompts at once, let's start with two. It's enough. And then bring you this education part. And I think especially after the first week, so because you do a weekly monitoring on all the data points, and we see that people finding this kind of, oh, okay, we are a little bit different now. The answer is different. There are, for example, another brand appearing. There is this one link which doesn't appear anymore, or a new one is added. And okay, there's another link which is constantly there. So when the people then really see, okay, this makes sense to do this on a recurring base, I think then we kind of had the first win for our educational mission achieved. Yes, that's
right. That way. Maybe a stupid question, but I've got to ask. And maybe whoever's listening, you should head to Audely, and then you maybe understand why I'm asking this. But what is the fundamental difference between keyword and prompt?
Yeah, I mean, fantastic question, Anna. So we talk a lot about search prompts, and the fundamental difference is, at the end of the day, if you're an SEO specialist or marketing teams, you probably have your list of keywords, right? These are your top important 110,000 keywords for Google, right? But the reality is that people use ChatGPT differently, right? They don't enter a keyword on ChatGPT. At least from what we've seen in our research, people use questions, use so-called prompts, right? The whole prompt topic became a thing since the introduction of ChatGPT. So the fundamental difference is that you have to translate, you have to turn your keywords into prompts. And because this is not only Audely specific, this applies to both traditional SEO tools or other monitoring tools. We are monitoring for you your prompts that you would like to have monitored, right? As a SEO tool monitors keywords for you, we are monitoring those prompts for you. And those prompts are put it differently, long tail keywords, conversational keywords, questions that people have. So the fundamental difference is more from a user consumer basis. And we have a little tool in Otterly. So if you log into your Otterly account, we have a tool that will help you translate and turn your keywords into prompts. But yeah, that's kind of the fundamental difference.
Yeah, thanks for elaborating. I think that's exactly the mistake that I made when I went to Otterly and I started thinking in keywords. Because it's just something that I'm used to. But yeah, I think you're right. Just a kind of a fundamental difference is that it's more of a conversation. You're actually talking to ChatGPT. I mean, some people have name for their ChatGPT. So what do you call yours?
I think the starting point for us was kind of this running shoes experiment. We always experimented with running shoes and people entering to Google running shoes, and at ChatGPT you're entering always, I want to do running. What are the best shoes? What are the best running shoes? Things like that. And that's in a super short sentence, the difference. So this is the one is a keyword and the one is a search prompt.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. Okay. That's awesome. So, I know we're running out of time a little bit, so I'm going to throw a couple more questions, the usual ones here. So you're early in your journey, but I'm sure it's already been fascinating, and like you've had some major milestones. So what has been the biggest win and the biggest failure, and can be very different for you too? So I expect both answers.
let's start with a little bit the crazy technical ones. I think we, you know, roller coasters in startups. So they typically go up and down. But what we saw at Otterly is really this super fast, heavy roller coaster, two times a day going down, two times a day going super up. So there is one thing, is this navigating all the changes from the platform providers. So because they are changing, it feels like daily, on a daily basis, they are what they are doing and how they're behaving. And we should somehow monitor this over time. It's just crazy, yeah. So this is definitely a really, really, really hard thing, and we did it quite often, yeah. What really me surprised me a lot is on the other side is a very, very, very intense win, is that we just really got this great response from the market. So you talk about this and people tell you, oh yes, that's something we should be aware of. So this kind of this really positive, passionate response from the market. So this is Thomas. Any other wins, fails?
I mean, I would double down on failure is maybe the wrong word, right? But we are, if Google is introducing AI Overviews tomorrow in Germany, everybody is starting to ask questions like, yeah, what's the impact of that? And suddenly marketers might see web traffic decline. So I think I had really two maybe failures in the way of go where your customers are, right? And our customers are right now in the US, because they're where people feel the biggest pains around Google and Google changing stuff. And I think we should have done, or we should have made that conclusion earlier, or maybe a bit more radical, right? Go where your audience is and then build that solution for them. Because, I mean, to be very frank, here in Germany, people don't feel that pain on Google, because Google hasn't even rolled out the AI Overviews, right? So go where your users are, and I think that's, call it a fail, right? But I should have over-prioritized that right from the beginning. To your point, win, I mean, it's a big win that without doing, I mean, to be very honest, any marketing so far, and that's just hitting the ground running, we got more than 1,400 users on the platform using Otterly, and that's just fantastic, because it's a fantastic foundation for community building, for education, for continuously building the product they need, because now we have that community of 1,400 people. So that's the thing I'm most proud of, and for me, the biggest win, really.
It sounds like a win. I'm really happy for you guys. And like I said, I'm for now barely, but still using it myself, and just kind of looking forward to exploring it a little bit more. But the last question is always about a hack, right? Joseph knows that. So yeah, if there is anything, you know, that worked for you that was really instrumental to the wins that you just described, or maybe just a little something to, you know, to manage that roller coaster that works for you. So anything that you think would be helpful to other founders that you can share.
There is this one thing which caught my attention already in the past sometimes, and when someone told me, find a wave. So go build a product in a market where there is a wave. And this is the first time I experienced this at first hand. We're riding a wave. This is definitely a wave. So a lot of things where maybe in the past felt a little bit hard to do, this is going so easy there when you're on the right wave. So this is, I think, yeah. Is it a hack? I don't know. Is it luck? Maybe. So yeah, but yeah, this is one of.
I would say, I mean, there's the saying, do things that don't scale, right? And I would translate that into do one-on-one outreach campaigns, right? I'm surprised how, let's say, easy it is. I mean, it's still hard work, right? Don't get me wrong, but how easy it is to message people on LinkedIn and, yeah, get their attention for a solution like Otterly, right? And you would be surprised, like even the, let's say, the big B2B marketing influencers and whatnot, right? You do get their attention if you really craft a really nice, personalized, one-on-one message that they will care about. And that it's not a hack, I said, because it's hard work to be very personalized and go in that direction. So that's really one thing. The other thing is, think about stuff where you can be different, right? We spoke about the TechCrunch article and how that was our answer to how can we stand out, right? But these are things that usually don't, I mean, when I say do things that where you can stand out, all that's needed is your creativity, not your marketing budget or any budget, right? Anyone can do that. And as said, we literally have a zero marketing budget right now. So it's possible, right? If you just think about creative ways where you can stand out in your persona groups. And for us, it was TechCrunch. For others, it might be Product Hunt. For others, it might be something else. Might be coming up with a nice billboard ad that you can book in your local city to get someone's attention, and it will get you a nice picture for social media, right? I don't know what it is, but yeah. Although there's AI, and AI is helping us generate all of those crazy content, it's our marketing job to still be creative and to stand out.
Absolutely. And, you know, I agree with all of it. To Joseph's point about, you know, riding a wave, yeah, it may, I think, feel like an unfair advantage, but I think you should take full advantage of it and, you know, just kind of learn surfing on the go.
Exactly.
And then start doing it. I mean, then start doing right? It and just... And I think also when you're riding the wave, someone else maybe is also riding the wave. So this maybe unfair advantage also comes with also a disadvantage. So yeah, true. It's in the end maybe balanced again.
Yeah, sure. And about, you know, doing things that don't scale and kind of like thinking from a zero marketing budget perspective, I think it's so important because, yeah, when you have the money, you can kind of like, yeah, you can buy partnerships and you can buy billboards and you can buy all kinds of stuff. But at the end of the day, yeah, if you kind of find a way to stand out and be personal and find your, you know, network and community and ambassadors and kind of just create this tight, neat connections, it's worth so much more.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. All right. Well, I'm happy to, you know, kind of creep into your little network and community as well. And thank you for, you know, giving me a try at Otterly. It's fascinating. And like I said, I will be trying it more and more and see how we perform and how we can use it in our marketing. And thank you so much for the conversation. It's great to see Joseph building something new again. Thomas, it's amazing to get to meet you. So yeah, happy to do it again sometime.
Yeah, likewise. Absolutely.
Thanks, Anna.
Thanks for having
us. Sure. Absolutely, anytime. And take care.
That was yet another awesome conversation on SaaS Unbound. We're always looking for new guests to share their experiences. We mostly talk with bootstrapped SaaS founders, and if you're one, reach out to me directly at anna@sas.group or find me on LinkedIn. If you're not bootstrapped or even not SaaS, but have a great story to tell, we want to hear from you too. And obviously, SaaS Unbound wouldn't be possible without the SaaS Group, a founder-friendly private equity company that buys awesome businesses that people love to take them to even greater success. If you're thinking about selling your company or just exploring your options, feel free to visit saas.group, fill in the form, and expect a response in under 24 hours.